Okay, as we know, this week we are going to commemorate Lag BaOmer. And Lag BaOmer always has been a very curious holiday. It's not clear exactly how it developed and how it evolved to become what it is today. And that's what I'd really like to try and look into this morning in our shiur. Most of the history part of the shiur, I did not do the research on my own because I am not a historian. But there's a great piece in the journal called Yeshurun where a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi Blau from Eretz Yisrael did a lot of research about the history and the development of Lag BaOmer. Obviously, we add a lot of our own ideas, but the general history that we're going to mention is really from him, and he deserves the credit. So let us just begin before he starts. Let's just give a little bit of the background. We have a Gemara which became a very well-known Gemara, the story of Maseches Yevamos Daf Samach Bei. Shneim Asar Elef Zugim Talmidim Hayu Lo LeRabbi Akiva. There were 12,000 pairs of students, and everybody asked, why does it say 12,000 pairs? Why doesn't it say 24,000 students? Whatever the answer to that is not relevant to our shiur, but they spanned a very large portion of the land of Israel. Megivas va'ad antifaras. V'kulam meisu b'perek echad. All of these 24,000 students died in one period of the year. Why, says the Gemara? B'pnei shalo nagu kavod ze laze. Because they were not respectful to one another. It's a very difficult comment to understand. Now, how can that be? We know that Rabbi Kiva is the one who said, Zekla gada b'Torah, what is the most fundamental principle of all of Torah? That is, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Rabbi Kiva also is the one who says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv Adam shenivra b'tzelem, every human being is considered special. Chaviv in Israel shenikru banam lamakom. We look at each other that we are the children of God Himself. So how can it be there? Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim lo nagu kavod ze laze. Not only that, the Gemara says in Psachim that Rabbi Kiva learns from the pasuk Es Hashem Elokecha Tira Es leRabbos Talmidei Chachamim. It means not only should he be respectful and in fear and in awe of God, but you have to also have that kind of perspective and attitude when you confront a Talmud Chacham as well. So how can it be that the students in Rabbi Kiva's yeshiva, I imagine every day before his shiur started, he got up and he said, by the way, let's just remind ourselves, what are we here for? V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, chaviv adam shenivra b'tzelem, l'rabos tamid hachamim. That is what his whole message was about. And how can it be that Rabbi Kiva's own Talmidim made this very grave mistake? And that is a very troubling statement of the Gemara. Every year when my father teaches this Gemara, he tells us the same comment, which is based on a passage of Rav Henkin, I believe, where he said the following: it cannot be that Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim actually were not respectful to each other. After all, their Rebbe was the one who used to give over this message to the Jewish people. It can't be that his students made that mistake. So what really happened? So he has an idea that perhaps what happened was, and this is based also on a comment of Rav Shmira Gaon, so it's a very old idea, that perhaps really there was a pogrom. And really all the 24,000 students died because, not Shalom Nagu Kavod Zelazeh, but rather because there was some kind of episode that happened and all of them were killed. Some historians say it was at the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt. Some say that that happened way later. That's very arguable whether or not that makes sense. But anyway, the idea that's suggested is that maybe really what happened was there was some kind of pogrom. But when they wanted to write down the story in the Gemara, there were censors, so they could not say the story as it really happened. So they were trying to figure out, what can we write in the Gemara that everybody will automatically know when they read the story that this just cannot be the story? So they took the message that would be the farthest from anyone's imagination. If I tell you, Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim lo nagu kavod ze laze, you'll say, this can't be, something's missing, it's impossible. Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim made that mistake, and automatically you'll know that this is just a code word for something else that really happened. Okay, that's the suggestion of Rav Henkin. I don't think it's a simple understanding of the Gemara. Be it as it may, our Gemara seems to say that something terrible happened, whatever the reason was. V'haya ha'olam shamim. And that means, says the Gemara, the world, after these students passed away, the world was desolate, the world was empty. Ad sheba Rabbi Kiva eitzel Rabbi Seinu shebedarim, until Rabbi Kiva picked himself up, went down to the south of the country, Vishana Laham, and he began to teach once again the new group of students that were interested in learning. Now, who were those students? Rab Meir, Rab Yehuda, Rab Yossi, Rab Shimon, Rab Elazar ben Shamua. Five Talmidim, five students. Veheim, heim, heim, midu, Torah, osasha, and they are the ones who are responsible for all of the proliferation of Torah as we know it today. Now, it happens to be, Rav Asher Weiss pointed out to me, if you collect what the Gemara says in many different places, you'll find that not only were these five students responsible for the resurgence of Torah after the Great Destruction, but you will find that basically almost all of Torah Shebaal Peh that we know today is from these five students. And what does that mean? We have a comment that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. Listen carefully. Stam Masnisin. If you have a Mishnah and you don't know exactly who the author of the Mishnah is, you should assume it is Rav Meir, the first of the five students. Stam Sifra. Says the Gemara, if you have a Sifra, which means a Medrash, and you don't know exactly who said it, you have a right to assume it's Rabbi Yehuda, student number two. Stam Sifri, if you have another kind of Medrash, the Sifri, and you don't know exactly who the author was, that was Rabbi Shimon. Stam Tosefta, if you have a Tosefta and you don't know who that is, that's Rabbi Nechemya. V'kulu Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. All of those were the students of Rabbi Akiva, and they were the final students of Rabbi Akiva after the Great Destruction. That's an amazing, amazing reality. And if I'm correct, I think it's true that there's not a single comment that we have in all of Chazal from that original group of 24,000 students. That's amazing. So you have an entire generation that's wiped out. Not one comment that we have saved from them. And here we have five students that started the new process of learning with Rabbi Akiva, and because of them, we have a Torah Shebaal Peh today. Because of them, we have a Mishnayis. Because of them, we have a Gemara. And because of them, we have everything that we know to be our Torah Shebaal Peh today. And says the Gemara, Tana, Kulam Mesu Mipesach V'Adatzeres, all of them died in a very short span of time, from Pesach till Shavuos. Now, based on the story that's recorded in this Gemara, we have a practice that the Tur quotes in the name of the Rishonim, that we have some kind of avelus, we have some kind of period of mourning, of bereavement, during this time of the year. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes, it's not only because of this story that the Gemara records of the 24,000 students, but also, says the Aruch HaShulchan, this time period in the year is when the Crusades happen. And therefore, writes the Aruch HaShulchan, this is considered to be a terrible time of year. This is Yemei HaDin, he says. These are days that we're not supposed to be feeling the same way that we do during other times of year. This is a time of year that we need to take very seriously. Number one, because of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Number two, he says, and you cannot compare tragedies, but he says, number two, the Crusades happen during this time of year. Now, if we just digress for a few minutes to think about what the Gemara actually teaches us. Isn't it strange that we commemorate the loss of 24,000 Talmidei Rabbi Akiva so many generations later? And the answer obviously is that we mourn not only the loss, but we mourn all of that potential. We mourn how much they could have contributed to our world. Can you imagine if we would have had 24,000 more Tanaim? Can you imagine what our world would look like? What our world would be like? What would our Torah Shebaal Peh look like? It would be so different. The experience that we would have had if only those 24,000 students would have given us and our world everything that they had to give over to the world. And not only that, the Gemara says here, after they died, Haya ha'olam shamem, the world was desolate. And you have to ask yourself, why was the world empty? There were plenty of other Tanaim alive at that time, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Ishmael and some other contemporaries of Rabbi Akiva. How come none of them were able to pick it up? And the answer is yes, maybe they survived, but that doesn't help the fact that the world was desolate because all of that potential of those 24,000 Jews was now gone, and all of their contributions. I think about this every year when we have Yom HaShoah in our community. So, it troubles me when people talk about the 6 million, because it's very hard to understand what 6 million really means. And it's not until you hear the story of an individual survivor who can say what it is that they went through, what kind of life they were dreaming of building and were not able to build, or what kind of life they ultimately did build, even after that tragedy, that you start to understand what 6 million really means. And it's a powerful thought. And that's exactly what we mourn here when we talk about the tragedy of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. It's not just the fact that many people died, it's the reality that we understand that there are so many people who would have given so much to our world and contributed so significantly, and because of that, our world today is completely different than it otherwise would have been. There's an amazing comment that Rashi has in the very beginning of Parshas Vayetze. And there we're told, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Charana. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, and he goes to Charan. So Rashi comments, why do we have to know that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva to go to Charan? Obviously, if he goes to Charan, it means he left where he was. He can't be in two places at the same time. Well, Rashi says that this means to teach us something additional, and that is that Yaakov Avinu left Be'er Sheva, and something happened when he left. It's not just that he traveled to Charan and recreated his life there. Something happened when he left the original location. What happened, says Rashi? Yitzias tzadik min ha'olam, when a tzadik leaves a certain location, panaziva, panahoda, panahadara. His influence and all that he was able to bring to that community is now lost. All of that potential of growth that the community could have had from watching and being in the presence of this kind of person, all of that is lost. And Rashi then says, we find the same idea by Rus and Naomi in the story that we're going to read on Shavuos. When they left Moab, when they left that community, the whole experience was different. Nothing was the same at all after they left the place where they had been. Now you know that every single word in the Torah is carefully measured and there for a very particular purpose. So why do we need to teach this lesson, both by Yaakov Avinu and once again by Rus and Naomi, if it's the same lesson? When somebody leaves town and they were an influential person, obviously they're going to make a difference when their presence is now missing. So the answer to that is, Rus and Naomi left a community called Moab. They were the righteous people. Obviously, when they leave, the community is empty, the community is bereft, the community is at a great loss because these two towering figures are no longer there. But you ask yourself, by Yaakov Avinu, when he left Be'er Sheva, who was left behind? Who was still there? His parents were alive, Yitzchak and Rivka. We'll be all right. And the answer is no. Because every individual contribution makes a major difference. And it doesn't matter that you leave Yitzchak and Rivka behind. That will not be the same experience now that Yaakov is lost. Now that Yaakov is no longer there, our entire community will be different. Even though we still have Yitzchak and Rivka, but we lost someone very significant. That is what we need to think about when we consider 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva and why we mourn them today. It's not simply because the world would be different. It's not simply because they could have contributed so much, but we think about the influence that every human being can have. Even though there were great people left behind, it makes no difference. Because your contribution is a major one. So now let's get back to the story of Lag BaOmer. We have this Gemara, the primary source, that tells us everything happened mi Pesach v'ad Atzeres. Nowhere do we have an indication in the Gemara itself that anything significant happened on Lag BaOmer. It sounds like this span for 7 weeks long, and there were people dying every single day, and we don't know that anything happened differently on Lag BaOmer than for the first 33 days after Pesach. However, the Torah writes that it seems we have a tradition from the days of the Rishonim that this is not to be taken literally. We assume that this only took place for the first 33 days of Sfiras HaOmer, and after that, the dying stopped. Now the dying stopped, and because of that, the Shulchan Aruch writes in the name of the Maharam Mirutenberg, therefore we don't say Tachanun on Lag BaOmer, and therefore he says, we also have a practice not to fast on Lag BaOmer, because this is a quasi-happy day. That's what he says. Then you go a little bit further, and the Ramah quotes in the name of the Maharil, not only do we leave out Tachanun, which always makes people happy, not only do we also have a practice not to fast, but he says, Noagim Lismach B'Yomze. We have a custom that we're excited, that we celebrate on the day of Lag BaOmer. Where that comes from is a very good question. And the Chok Yaakov asks a very obvious question. Why would you celebrate when the Talmidim stopped dying when there wasn't anybody left to die? That's not a reason to celebrate. They stopped dying because they were all killed. And now Rabbi Akiva was left with nothing anymore. So of course, the plague ended. The plague ended because there was nobody else that was left to be plagued. So says the Chok Yaakov, is that really a justification for us to celebrate? Very interesting question. Let's look at number Dalet, how the Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha. Noagim shelo lisa isha ben Pesach le'atzeres ad Lag Ba'Omer. We don't make weddings from Pesach until Lag Ba'Omer. Mipnei sheba'oso zman mesu talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Because as we just saw in the Gemara, in this period of time, the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva passed away, and the Aruch HaShulchan adds, this is also the time of the Crusades. Many terrible things happen during this time of year. Avol, says the Shulchan Aruch, very interestingly, le'ares ulekadesh mutter. Although we're not allowed to make weddings during this period of year, we are allowed to get engaged during this period of year. Why? Why should there be a difference between engagement and marriage? Both of them are very exciting times. Obviously, a wedding is much more exciting. But an engagement is something we also should seemingly have said is not permissible. So why do we allow that? And this is a fascinating comment. For some people, it's frightening, but it's a fascinating comment that the Gemara says. The Gemara says you're allowed to get engaged even during the time of Avelus because Shema Yikadmenu Acher Berachamim. It's a very startling statement. It means I'm going to be on a date with whoever it is that I plan to marry. Somebody else who's friendly with me or with the girl or with the guy, whoever it is going to see us on a date and they're going to say, hey, I had my eyes on that person. I wanted to marry them. They're going to run to start davening. Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim means they're going to daven with so much kavana that God is actually going to break this union, this connection between this boy and girl. And this other person is going to be able to take away your potential shidduch. That's an amazing comment. First of all, it shows you the koach hatfila. That's first of all. Look what you can do. But second of all, what does that tell us about shidduchim? What does that tell us about basher? You know, we all have this idea that everybody has a basher. So, what does that mean? How can it be if God set out? The Gemara says, "Arba'im yom kodem yitziras avlad," 40 days before a child is born, "bas kol yotzeis," a bas kol goes out from heaven and informs us, "bas ploni the ploni," this woman is going to marry this man, and all the shidduchim are made. So we all understand from that it means we all have a basher. I assume everybody's heard of that. Well, if that's the case, how can it be that everybody has a basher, but I'm going to be able to steal somebody else's basher when I see them on a date? Can that be? So what does it mean? Oh, so does that mean it wasn't their basher? Then it shouldn't have happened in the first place. It has nothing to do with my tefillah. Again, the whole reason why I'm allowed to get engaged during Avelus is because we're afraid if I don't seal the deal, someone else is going to steal her. What do you mean someone else is going to steal the girl? If it wasn't destined for you, you won't get her. And if it was, then there's nothing to rush about. I'm going to have her anyway. So how do you understand this? And this is a very problematic statement. And the Gemara seems to say that, yes, it's true, there's such a thing as a basher. And by the way, if God decided this is really the basher, this is the person you should be spending your life with, this is the person you should marry, then how do people ever get divorced? You're going against God's plan. So this is a major theological problem that some of the Rishonim deal with. So the Meiri has a comment that my father always says in Shir. Some people don't like it, but the Meiri says it. So the Meiri writes that the Gemara tells us that there's such a thing as Zivug Rishon and such a thing as Zivug Sheni. Simple understanding of that is there's first marriage and second marriage. Some people get divorced and get married a second time. Writes the Meiri, that's not what it means. The Meiri tries to explain what exactly happens with Basher. Well, says the Meiri, when people used to get married at 5 years old, there was no way that a person can make a responsible decision at 5 years old who they should marry and spend the rest of their lives with. It doesn't make sense. That's what the custom used to be. They would get married as young children. And therefore, the Meiri writes, that's where the bas kol kicks in. God said, I am going to find you the husband or wife that you were always wanting to marry because you have no means of doing it on your own. But says the Meiri, now that we get married at an older age, and I've already at that point made so many decisions on my own, where I'm going to go to school, where I'm going to go to seminary or yeshiva. I made many choices in my own life to be the kind of person that I want to be. Now you're going to say I'm stuck with the person that God put me with when we were both born? Maybe that person went in one direction, I went in a different direction. We each made our own decisions. We each decided to go our own way. And therefore, we're no longer compatible with each other. After all, we do believe that everybody has bechira. Everybody has choice in life, and therefore, how can you say that God sets up the basher when, after all, Everybody went off on their own way, and maybe at the time that we were born, we may have been for each other, but now we're in totally different areas of the world, and we're going in totally different directions. This doesn't make sense at all. It's totally incompatible. Says the Meiri, that's what Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni means. If you get married at a very young age, where you're too immature to really make a decision on your own, that's where the Bashert kicks in. When we're talking about a person who's Zivug Sheni, doesn't mean a second marriage, it means you've already passed that threshold, like us today, where we're already getting married as adults, then perhaps there's what to talk about that you need to find your own. Which is a troubling statement for people. That means, really, I'm off on my own? God's not looking out for me anymore? So I don't know. I'm not an expert in Bashert and Shidduchim, I have no idea, but it's an interesting idea. And here the Shulchan Aruch says, that is the reason why la'ares u'lekadesh mutter. I'm allowed to get engaged, even though I can't make a wedding during this time of Sfiras HaOmer. I'm allowed to get engaged. But what do you mean? I'm in the middle of Avelus. How can we get engaged during this time of year? And the answer is because you have to be concerned. If you don't seal the deal, maybe somebody else will take that person. So what do you do with Bashert? It's a very good question. Says the Shulchan Aruch further, v'chein ogim shelo lehistaper ad lag ba'omer, she'omrim sha'az paskum ilamos, ve'ein lehistaper ad yom lamed dalid ba'omer. So if there are any Svardim in the room, the Svardim have the practice to wait until 34 days in the Omer. However, the Rama quickly corrects that for us Ashkenazim, and he says, b'medinos elu, ein no'agim kein. We don't wait for day 34, we do it immediately on day 33. Ala mistaperim b'yom lag atzmo, umar bimbok tzas simcha. And we celebrate on this day of Lag BaOmer, Ve'ein Omrim Bo Tachanun. Now, what's interesting is the Rama passes away in 1572. Up until 1572, we know nothing about a connection between Lag BaOmer and Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Did you notice anybody say anything about Reb Shimon ben Yochai? Isn't that interesting? Everybody today says Lag BaOmer, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, but so far in the 1500s, we still have nothing at all that tells us that there's any indication to connect Reb Shimon ben Yochai and Lag BaOmer. So what happened? Well, the Rama dies in 1572. That same year is the death of the Arizal. The Arizal lived in Svat. He was part of the Mekubalim that moved to Eretz Yisrael at the time in the 1500s. The Arizal, by the way, passed away at 38 years old, which is an amazing phenomenon. Everybody has heard of the Arizal. And in 38 years, look what he accomplished. It's amazing. So said the Arizal, there is a connection between Reb Shimon ben Yochai and Lag BaOmer. But this is the first mention of it in the 1500s. So let's see. Let's read the story together. It's the beginning of it is a little bit simple, but then it gets wild. So let's look at number A. Inyan minig shenagu Yisrael aleches biyom Lag BaOmer al kivrei Rashbi v'Rabbi Elazar beno. There is some idea that people visit the grave of Reb Shimon ben Yochai on Lag BaOmer. Asher kivurim biir Meirom kanoda. That we know they are buried in Meirom. Va'ochlim v'shosim usmechem sham, and they party there and they have a great celebration. Ani ra'isi lemori, says Reb Chaim Vital, who is the preeminent student of the Arizal. He says, I saw my great teacher, the Arizal, Shahalach l'sham pam achas biyom Lag BaOmer, that one year on Lag BaOmer he traveled with all of his students to Meiron, hu v'chal anshei beiso v'yashav sham shlosha yamim rishonim shel ha'shavu ahu. So the Arizal went, very nice, his student records the story that they went together on a trip to Meiron. Okay, so far so good. Then in the next paragraph he says, we even had some friends who brought their little kids there, and they decided to do a chalaka, which means to do an upsharon. Okay, and he explains where that comes from. Fine, so far so good. Now listen to the crazy story. Gam Hayed, bottom paragraph on the page. Gam Hayed or Rabbi Avram Halevi. We had another friend who was part of our group that year by the name of Rabbi Avram Halevi. Now this Rabbi Avram was a great, pious individual. And what was so great about him? That every day of the year, he felt like it was Tisha B'Av. Now what's so good about that? So the reason why he was a great person is because every day of the year, he felt the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The way that we're supposed to feel on Tisha B'Av is the way he felt every year, every day of the year. And as a result of his feelings, he decided every day in his Shmona Esrei, he's going to insert the paragraph that we say only on Tisha B'Av, he's going to insert it into his Shmona Esrei every day. So on Tisha B'Av we add in the bracha of Yerushalayim Ircha, we say Nachem Hashem Elokeinu, and we talk about Ha'ir, Ha'chareva, Ha'abzuya, Ha'shomema. We talk about the desolate, empty city of Yerushalayim, and how much we want that we should come back and return to Yerushalayim. Every day of the year, this great tzaddik, Rabbi Avraham Halevi, used to add that paragraph into his Shmona Esrei. Okay? Comes Lag BaOmer. He shows up in Meiron together with all the other Talmidei HaArizal, and as he always did, he adds the paragraph of Nachem in the Bracha of Yerushalayim Ircha. The Arizal is davening Shmona Esrei right next to him. He waits for him to finish, and he turns to him and he says, you know, I just want to tell you what happened. You're not going to believe it. Reb Shimon ben Yochai came out of his grave and stood up and had a conversation with me. And what was the content of this conversation? Reb Shimon ben Yochai asked me, who is this student of yours, Avram, over there? Why is he saying such sad things on a day of celebration for me? So the Arizal turns to Rabbi Avram and he says, what did you say? So he says, well, every day of the year I say Nachem, and today was no different than any other. Well, says the Arizal, I want you to know that Reb Shimon ben Yochai is very disappointed with you, because today is a day of great celebration. Now, we don't know what the day of great celebration is all about. Why is this the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai is so happy? So then, about 100 years later, the story develops even further. And then, apparently, the story goes that the reason it's a day of great celebration is because this is the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai passed away. Says the B'nai Yisachar, you should also imagine, if this is the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai passed away, it's also the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai was born. Because the Gemara says, as Mispar Yamecha Amalei, great people have all of their days, so we assume they die on the day that they're born, and therefore says the B'nai Yisachar, if we assume, now this is an assumption on top of an assumption on top of an assumption, for 1600 years nobody knew when Reb Shimon ben Yochai died. All of a sudden come along some great people and they tell us that, by the way, this is the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai died. Now who said that? Turn to the second side of the page and you have Reb Yonasan Eibeshitz, who lives in the 1700s, he's the Rav in Altoona and Krakow in Poland. And there, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes in his Sefer Yaros Devash, Yom Lamed Gimel Ba'omer Hu Yoma Dehilula De Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. This is the day. What's Yoma Dehilula? What does that mean? What? It's the day of celebration. So what does that mean? We refer to a yard site as a Yoma Dehilula. Why is a yard site referred to as a Yoma Dehilula? Because the Gemara says that God is finally reunited. It's like the wedding between God and this precious neshama that he very much wanted back for all those years that it was down on this earth. So we refer to that as a Yoma Dehilula, that God is once again reunited and he's excited. He's making, so to speak, a wedding in heaven because he's reunited with a very righteous person. So says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, we have a tradition that Lag BaOmer is the Yoma Dehilula of Reb Shimon ben Yochai. V'haya l'mala hilula. In heaven there was a great celebration. And because of that, we have a practice that on that day we all celebrate because we are very excited over the fact that once again God was reunited with Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Now, this article that we started with in the Yeshurun Journal points out that really this is the tradition in the 1700s, the Balatanya writes the same thing, that there's a reason why people celebrate on Lag BaOmer because they assume this is the day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai passed away. Now he says, what is the origin of this idea? It comes from a Sefer Chemdas Hayamim. I don't know what the Sefer Chemdas Hayamim is. I've never seen it. I don't know who wrote it. But he did the research. And it turns out that this Sefer Chemdas Hayamim is where everybody got this idea that Lag BaOmer is the day of the Yahrzeit of Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Now, the problem is, there were many academics who said that this Sefer Chemdas Hayamim was written by one of the students of Shabtai Tzvi. So can we really rely on anything that this Sefer tells us? He's not a credible source. He's potentially one of the Talmidim of Shabtai Tzvi. So he calls into question the fact that everybody assumes that this is the Yom HaDehilula of Reb Shimon Yochai, that this is the day that Reb Shimon Yochai passed away, but really, it's not so clear that that ever actually happened. So it's a very interesting issue as to whether or not Reb Shimon Yochai really has a connection to this day in that way or not. Outside of that, the Chasam Sofer asks a very fundamental question. The Gemara tells us that we have no right to add Yamim Tovim onto the ones that the Torah already has instituted for us. So the Torah gave us Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Correct? We don't have a right to add new days of Yamim Tovim into our calendar. What's the obvious question? Purim and Chanukah. What do you do with Purim and Chanukah? The Torah doesn't tell us about Purim, doesn't tell us about Chanukah. So what right did the Chachamim have in the times of the Gemara to add Purim and Chanukah? That seems to be against the prohibition that the Gemara says of adding new Yamim Tovim. So the answer that the Achronim suggest is, and it's based on a comment of the Ramban, that when you have something that is celebrating Aschalta de Geula, when you have something which is a turning point, which leads us closer to the ultimate Geula of Binyan Beis Hamikdash, that is when you're allowed to have a day of celebration. So Chanukah, we assume, was the rededication of the Beis Hamikdash. It brought us closer to the service of God in the Beis Hamikdash proper, and therefore we assume at a time of Timul Kol Hashmanim, when we had no access to the Beis Hamikdash, we were not able to do the Avodah, and finally we won, that's a reason to celebrate, and that is why they had a right to institute Chanukah. What about Purim? Harder to justify Purim, but they say that the truth is Purim was the beginning of the return to Eretz Yisrael. After that, after the Jewish people won that issue that they had with Haman, after that they later on got the permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael to build the Beis Hamikdash, and that's when everything started. So, that is the justification that's given for Chanukah and Purim, and this is why Yom HaAtzmaut is such a controversial issue. It's not something that is just a political issue, it's something that is a very interesting halachic issue. What right do we have to add new days of celebration onto the calendar that never existed? In fact, we work very hard to figure out why Chanukah and Purim are allowed, so how are you going to explain why Yom HaAtzmaut is something that potentially should be allowed? Well, the justification that some give is, the same way that Chanukah was the beginning of our opportunity to serve God once again and have a Beis HaMikdash, maybe you assume that this is also the Aschalta de Geula, this is also the beginning of our opportunity to serve God once again in a Beis HaMikdash, this is just setting the stage for that. Again, it's not so simple, but writes the Chasam Sofer, look at number Zion. Likvoa moed shelo nasu bo nes v'lo husker b'shasu poskin b'shum makom v'remez remiza. Nowhere do you find in the Gemara that Lag Ba'omer is a day of great celebration. Certainly nowhere in Chumash. Rak menias hespid v'tainis min hagahu v'taima gufa lo yadana mikal makom. La soso yom simcha v'hadlaka uv'makom yadua dafka. Lo yadati im rasha'im la sos kein. Says the Chasam Sofer, who allowed us to do this? Who allowed us to put Lag BaOmer as a new day of celebration on the calendar that never existed? So the Arizal said that he once saw Reb Shimon Yochai come out of his grave? Really? Is that a reason why we're allowed to celebrate and make a whole new day that's on the calendar now for all eternity? Writes the Chasam Sofer, that would seem to be against what the Gemara says we are allowed to do. And number two, the Sholem Eshev, who was one of the great Gedolim in the 1800s, one of the Polish Gedolim, he says, I just don't understand. Every other time that we have a Yahrzeit, we assume that it's a time of great self-reflection. Why do we fast on the day of a Yahrzeit? Anybody has that practice here? Day of a Yahrzeit for a parent? Many people fast. Why do they do that? The assumption is because we think that a Yahrzeit is a day of din. It's a serious day for the family. And the reason why we fast is because we need to take this day seriously. We've all heard of Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Many people all over the world have the practice that they fast on Zayin Adar because this is a very serious day for the Jewish people. Well, ask the Sholem Eshev, I don't understand what happened here. Even if you assume that this is correct, that Reb Shimon Yochai died on Lag BaOmer, and therefore it's a Yom HaDehilula, I don't understand why you're partying. Moshe Rabbeinu dies Zayin Adar, everybody's fasting. Reb Shimon Yochai dies on Lag BaOmer, all of a sudden everyone's celebrating. How does that make sense? How does that make sense? It's against everything that Jewish tradition has told us up until now. And therefore, writes of Yosef Shaul Nathanson, he's really not sure what this is all about. So, Lag BaOmer has a rich history, and there's a lot to talk about. But I just want to end this year with some very important points about what we can learn from this story of Rabbi Kiva. We have in the Avos Rabbi Nassim, a fascinating comment about Rabbi Kiva's life. And there we're told that Rabbi Kiva was living a life that was not at all a rabbinic life, not at all a religious life. And one day he's sitting al gav ha-nahar, he's sitting next to the river, and he sees that there's a hole in a rock. And he says to himself, how can it be that this rock got a hole in it? And then he comes to the conclusion it must be because for years and years there was water that was dripping onto this rock, and each drop made the rock a little softer, until finally it made a hole. Where Rabbi Kiva learned from this episode that no matter how old I may be, no matter how many poor choices and decisions in my life I may have made, I always have the opportunity to change the direction of my life. And we're told that at 40 years old, Rabbi Kiva began to study the Aleph Beis. He began to study Torah from its very fundamental aspect of what Torah is about. Rabbi Kiva knew nothing. And at 40 years old is where it all began. It's not just that it began at 40 years old. Rabbi Kiva started a journey that changed the Jewish people forever. It's hard to say that you're a fan of one of the Tanaim over any other. All of the Tanaim were very special. But in many ways, Rabbi Kiva was really one of the greatest Tanaim. I named my son Akiva after Rabbi Akiva. It's not just because we had no grandparents left to name after, but it's also because Rabbi Kiva was such an inspiring personality, and his life was so pivotal for the Jewish people, not only in his time, but for all eternity. The Medrash says by Avraham Avinu, why is it that Avraham Avinu was instructed to do a bris milah on himself at 99 years old? Why didn't God ask him to do this way earlier on? Once Avraham Avinu hikir es boro, once Avraham Avinu figured out that there was a God in the world and he started to connect with him, why was he not instructed to do a bris milah immediately? And the answer that the Medrash gives us is because God wanted to teach a person you can be 99 years old and look how much your life can change. You can be living life a certain way for many, many years. You can make many decisions, and sometimes they're the right ones, and many times they're the wrong ones. And you get yourself stuck in a place, and you believe that nothing can ever change. And Avraham Avinu was taught, the very first Jew God wanted to teach him, that it's never too late to make a major change in your life. That's what Rabbi Kiva teaches us, the first lesson of his life, when he begins to have a complete metamorphosis at 40 years old. That's what Avraham Avinu, the very first Jew, teaches us when he was instructed to do a bris milah at 99 years old. And this is really something that all of us can learn. Listen to an amazing medrash about Rabbi Kiva. And I just think about what happened at the time of Rabbi Kiva's death. I'm sorry, the time of the death of Rabbi Kiva's students. Just do the math. I'm not a major mathematician at all. But just do simple math for a minute. 24,000 students in 33 days. How many levayas did Rabbi Kiva attend every day? Over 700. Over 700 levayas a day. For 33 days straight. And what happens? 24,000 students. 700 levayas a day. What does Rabbi Kiva do after it's all over? Comes into the Beis Medrash and he sees there's nobody left. Starts knocking on doors, and he's probably dealing with the Yisomim and the Almanos all over the place. Everybody's crying. The world is falling apart. And by the way, this perhaps was at the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt. It's a big discussion whether or not it was, but I would imagine there was major PR issues for Rabbi Kiva also. Can you imagine what they wrote in the newspapers? This man, Rabbi Kiva, who his entire life was building this yeshiva with these Talmidim and inspiring the world, look what happened. Look what happened. Did any of it pay off? Not a single student left to tell us the messages of Rabbi Kiva. And what does he do? He stands up. If you do the math, he was over 100 years old at that point. At over 100 years old, after he invests his entire life making this happen, and he loses everything. It's not like he invested in a business, but he had a life outside of it. This was his entire life. This was everything. And at 100 years old, Rabbi Kiva, after losing 24,000 students, after attending 700 funerals a day for 33 days, that very next day he stands up and he says, I will never let it stop me. I'm determined to make a difference in the world. and I really can make this world a better place. And it doesn't matter what happened. And it doesn't matter how much destruction I just suffered. I can make this world a better place by galvanizing myself, by getting the strength together to pick myself up and start all over again. Nothing wrong. There's an amazing comment in the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, where the Medrash says that at the very beginning of the creation of the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Bonei Olamos Umachrivan. God created worlds and destroyed them. He created them and destroyed them until He finally got the beautiful world that we have, and He said, Dein Hu Dehanayas Li, this world is beautiful. This is the way it should be. So you have to ask yourself, really? God couldn't get it right the first few times? He created worlds and then He had to destroy. You know, I don't like the way this tree came out. I don't like the way the ocean looks. I don't like the way this looks. He didn't like the highways. What's the problem? God couldn't get it right. We say in our davening every day, Baruch Omer Ve'oseh. All God has to do is say, and it comes into existence. Ba'asar Ma'amaros Nivra Ha'olam. All God had to do, He didn't have to work too hard to make the world be the way it is. So He couldn't figure out how to get it right? What does the Medrash mean? Bonei Olamos Umachrivan, that's what you do. Create worlds, destroy them, start over again, try again. And the answer of Soloveitchik said is because God wanted to teach us from the very inception of the world that a person should never be discouraged. You can have an entire world that you have built, and your entire world can be destroyed. And what is your response supposed to be? You pick up and you start to build a world again. And if that gets destroyed, there's nothing wrong with trying again. And God Himself was Bonei Olamos Umachrivan, not because He couldn't get it right. We believe that God is perfect. Kol derachav mishpat. Ein emunah ve'ein avel tzadik v'yashar hu. Everything about God is perfect. He could have gotten it right. But God wanted to teach every human being that there's that possibility in life for your entire world to come crashing down in front of you. When nothing in life seems to be going the right way. When all the decisions that you've made have led you to a place where life is impossible to live. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you're living through a time like that, where you see a world crumbling and being destroyed right in front of you, and maybe it's the world that you've even created throughout the many, many years of your hard work, there is nothing wrong with picking yourself up and saying, I'll just start to build another one. Look at Rabbi Akiva, 100 years old, the very next day after his entire life's work gets destroyed in front of his own eyes, he starts again with 5 Talmidim. And he changed the landscape of Torah Shebaal Peh forever. All 5 of those students are the greatest influence on our Torah as we know it today. All because Rabbi Akiva had the courage to start over again. All because he was not deterred by the tragedy that he went through. And I think you see not only the opportunity that we have to look past destruction, but I think you also see what happens when one individual has the courage to make a difference in the world. So the Rambam writes, when delineating the tshuva process, the Rambam says that God looks down on the beautiful world that He created. And He sees that there are some righteous communities down there. And He sees others that are corrupt and immoral societies. And the Ribbono Shel Olam every year has extreme frustration and disappointment by some communities, and He's very proud of others. And He starts to make a calculated discussion in His head, so to speak. Is the world worthy of being kept alive? Should we continue this or not? And after a detailed calculation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it seems that the world is just about in balance. It seems that some of the people are good, some are virtuous, and some perhaps are not. And the Rambam writes that we all need to look at ourselves as the person who will make the difference between a world being zakai or a world being chayiv. Now, I always read this Rambam and was troubled by it. Really? You mean to tell me the world is exactly perfect? 50-50? And I'm going to make the difference? It can't be. So how do you understand that Gemara? How do you understand that Rambam? So the Torah has an amazing story. It's a story of an ir hanidachas. What is the story of the ir hanidachas? The story is you have an entire city that veers off the path and begins to serve Avodah Zarah. Says the Torah, our response to such a city is, Hachareim tacharimeim, you must burn every remnant of that city. Nobody's allowed to know that it ever existed. Everything there needs to be destroyed. Now, the way we're introduced to that whole story in Chumash is Yatsu Anashim B'nei Belial. It means that a bunch of nefarious men went out into a city and they started to convince people that they should now veer off the path and serve Avodah Zarah. Now, the Gemara says, do you know that Miut Anashim Shnayim? When the Torah says Anashim, it means two people. Now, this is amazing. Yatsu Anashim B'nei Belial means two people, two nefarious men, went out into a city and convinced an entire city to go in a totally different direction. And as a result of what they did, the city is wiped out and burned to the ground. Look at the difference two people can make in the world. You ever been to an airport and you get frustrated by the fact that you have to get undressed as you're about to go get your flight? And you have to take your shoes off, and I ask myself, why am I taking my shoes off? For what reason? You know why? Because one time in the history of our world, there was one very crazy person who put a liquid bomb in his shoe. So can one person change the world or not? One person. Look what they can do. And listen to a Yalkut Shimoni. We have a story of Chana and her husband Elkanah. Chana was a woman, as we know, who couldn't have children, and she was very upset about her lot in life. Now, we know a lot about Chana, and the Tfilas Chana is very famous, but the Yalkut Shimoni there says a story about Elkanah. Elkanah was the Gadol HaDor. And we're told that Elkanah haya ola leregel. Elkanah was going up to be ola regel, v'hayalan b'rechova shel ir. And as he traveled from his house to the Beis HaMikdash, he would sleep over, not in a hotel, not in somebody's house, but he would park himself right in the middle of the village square. V'haysa HaMedina Mirageshes. And the whole community was so moved and inspired. What is Elkanah doing in our town? And everybody would ask him the next morning when they went out to shul, where are you going? V'haya Omer, and he said, I'm going to be Ola Regel on the base Hashem Bishilo. Atem lama lo tavo imanu v'nelech yachad? Would you care to join us? I'm happy to have some extra visitors. Miyad enea mishagros demos. Everybody began to cry and they joined him. Ad l'shana haba chamisha batim. The next year there were 5 families who went. The next year 10 families. Until ultimately it says, he did this every year. Ad shahayu kulam olim. One man was determined to change the entire Jewish people. And that is what Elkanah was able to do. Because Elkanah had the strength and the courage to stand up against whatever was going on in his time. Do I care that nobody in the world is being Ola Regel? Makes no difference to me. I have the ability, I have the capacity as a human being to make a major difference in the world. And that's exactly what he did. He changed the face of the entire Jewish people of his generation. So look at the following medrash. When the medrash tells us about, it's true, it's one example. There are many examples. But listen to this. There's a medrash where we talk about Rabbi Akiva himself. So you look at number Tess here on the page. We have a pasuk, I think it's in Koheles. Baboker zira es zarecha ule'erev al tanech yadecha. We are told in the morning, you should do your harvest, you should plant. But at night, don't forget that you should continue to invest and to plant even then. Well, says the Medrash, it's not clear exactly what this is a reference to. So the Medrash tells us, if you planted at this season of year, you should plant at the other season of year because you never know which harvest is going to be a good one. So you may as well diversify, because you never know which one will be profitable. Very practical suggestion. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, that's not what this is a reference to, but rather this is talking about in Ba Ani Etzlecha B'Shachris, Tainlo. Ba'arvis, Tainlo. Somebody comes to you in the morning and says, I need help, I need a chesed, I need you to assist me in doing something. You can't say to yourself, well, I did my chesed for the day, I'm done. Check out for the day. No, Do a chesed in the morning, do a chesed in the afternoon, do a chesed at night. Why? She'ein atel yodea eze mehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu kosev alecha. You don't know which one is your ticket to Gan Eden. You don't know which one is going to be what will make God very proud of you. So don't say to yourself, you know, I've done enough for the day. Don't ever say that. Rabbi Yishmael says, what it means is, imlamadata Torah b'narusecha, lamod Torah b'ziknusecha. Even if you may have been educated at a young age, always continue to study, because there's always more to know. So I refer to a person who's knowledgeable as a Talmud Chacham, because you're always a Talmud, you're always a student. The wise person is somebody who's always willing to learn more, and always willing to accumulate more knowledge and understand something better. But finally, says Rabbi Kiva, I'll tell you what this pasuk means. Baboker zera es zarecha ule'erev al tanach yadecha. You know what it means? It's talking about me. I went through this in my life. Im hayu lecha talmidim min arusecha. If you have built something special in your younger years, and you had many followers and many students, and you were highly successful, that may have all been the case, but asei lecha talmidim b'ziknusecha. Don't ever stop teaching. You know why? She'ein ata yodea eze mehem miskayim lach. Ze o ze. I lived through this, says Rabbi Kiva. I invested my entire life in 24,000 students, and I thought that was going to be the salvation of the Jewish people. And how wrong I was. And that's why I stood up, and I taught 5 new students, and I said to myself, who knows what will come of this? But how can I lose from trying? And look what came of it. As a result of the courage and the strength and the fortitude of Rabbi Kiva, who was willing to stand up and say, I'm going to put myself together and do what I have to do to influence and to impact the Jewish community forever. Look what we all have as beneficiaries of Rabbi Kiva's bravery, of that strength. We have a Torah Shebaal Peh. We have all of those great Tanaim that he taught himself after the tremendous loss that he went through, and that is the lesson of Rabbi Kiva himself. You know why we celebrate on Lag BaOmer? Whether Rabbi Shimon Yochai died on that day or not is up for debate. Whether Rabbi Shimon Yochai was born on that day, also up for debate. But I think there's a reason to celebrate on Lag BaOmer, because Lag BaOmer is the day where we learn from Rabbi Kiva that it's never too late to make our lives go in a different direction than we once may have wanted them to go. That we can all make decisions that we want life to be different for us. That I want to have a more meaningful life. That I want life to be positive, even though it's been negative until this point. And I'm depressed because so many things seem to be going wrong, and I lost my job, and my children don't have a shidduch, and I'm looking for something else that I want to make my life more meaningful. And Lag BaOmer is the time where every single human being can learn from Rabbi Kiva. You haven't suffered what he went through. Trust me. And he was able to pick himself up and say, at 100 years old, after all that I suffered, I'm going to start all over again. And I have nothing wrong with doing that. That's the message that God taught Avraham Avinu, the very first Jew. You can be 99 years old, and I'm going to show you that the course of your life is going to go in a very different direction than you ever imagined it to go. Now I'm going to ask you to do a bris milah. And who knows how many decisions you may have made along the way that may have been the right ones, the wrong ones. It makes no difference. We're going to start all over again, 99 years old. That's what Rabbi Kiva does, that's what Avraham Avinu does, and that's what God himself does. Bone olamos umachrivan. God creates worlds, and God sometimes destroys worlds. You know why? Not because he couldn't get it right, but because God wants to teach all of us that we all can make a major impact and a major difference in the world, regardless of all of our failures, regardless of how many times we may have tried and been unsuccessful. Life has the possibility of being a very meaningful one, of being a very special one, and the contribution of every single one of these Talmidei Rabbi Kiva is a loss, not only to their generation, but to all future generations, which means the contributions that we can all make, and we don't, will be a loss not only to our generation, but to all future generations as well. That's why we celebrate on Lag BaOmer, because it gives us hope, because it gives us the opportunity to see past the failure, to see past all of the difficulty, and to pick ourselves up and do what we need to do to have the most successful and meaningful lives that we all want to have. Let me